You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in to another new episode of Locked On Rockets, your home for podcast commentary on all things Houston Rockets basketball. As always, I'm your host, Ben DuBose, Rockets correspondent for Sports Talk 790, the team's official radio flagship in Houston. As we chat this Thursday evening, I figure it's about time we survey the rest of the teams in the NBA, not just the Rockets, and analyze the entire Western Conference landscape as it pertains to the Rockets and the top threats entering this upcoming 2018-2019 season, which begins with training camp starting just about a month or so from now. We've talked a lot about the Rockets in recent weeks because it's been a very busy offseason as expected. They did re-sign both Chris Paul and Clint Capella on long-term deals, lost Trevor Ariza and Luke Bamute, but brought in a host of new players, drafted De'Anthony Melton, rookie guard out of USC that they like a lot, and then in free agency, signed James Ennis, signed Michael Carter-Williams, and oh, by the way, they also signed that Carmelo Anthony guy this week, former scoring champion, 10-time All-Star, 3-time Olympic gold medalist, certain first ballot Hall of Famer. So yeah, we've had a lot to discuss over the past 6 weeks as it pertains to the Rockets themselves. And for a team that won 65 games a season ago and effectively had the Warriors pushed to the brink, all but beaten before the ill-time Chris Paul hamstring injury in the final seconds of Game 5, which took the Rockets up 3-2 in the Western Conference Finals, because of that, there's plenty of reason to believe that this Rockets team, assuming they maintain a similar level of play, is good enough to only be challenged by the Warriors. So it's natural to have a bit of an insular focus, and when you combine that with Daryl Morey and the basketball operations staff being as aggressive as they've been this summer, that leads to a lot of analysis of the Rockets in a vacuum. That said, it's important to note that in the NBA, it's not just about you. Sometimes, even if you maintain a similar level of play, or at least expected level of play, if another team makes a move up in the standings or down, whatever it may be, then because you are competing with other teams, even if you maintain a similar level of play, you may have more or less competition in a given year. So that's why, after focusing the last few weeks largely on the Rockets, because they might have been the most busy team in the NBA, especially with these Carmelo Anthony rumors over the past month, now that the Rockets and many of the off-seasons around the NBA feel close to complete. Now, maybe the Rockets have a Ryan Anderson trade still to come for a 3-and-D wing, but if that happens, I think that's probably closer to training camp when we start to have a little bit of time leverage on either Houston's side or the team receiving Ryan Anderson. Lots of possibilities, including the Miami Heat. That would be in a deal for Tyler Johnson or James Johnson, I would presume. Maybe the Atlanta Hawks with Kent Bazemore, etc., etc. For now, though, with it being mid-August and the doldrums of the NBA calendar in terms of not just a lack of games, still a month or so from training camp, but also a lack of off-season activity, no real rumors of substance in terms of free agency or trades at the moment, I think this is a good time to evaluate what not just the Rockets have done, but all teams in the Western Conference this summer, and particularly from the context of who can threaten the Rockets this upcoming season. Now, first things first, of course the Warriors are at the forefront of that list. They were probably the most talented team in NBA history already, and now they added another all-star in Boogie Cousins. Yes, there are questions about his health coming off a blown Achilles. Yes, there are questions as to how well he fits. But regardless, the Warriors are the gold standard. They're the back-to-back defending champions 3 times in 4 years, and really ever since Kevin Durant went there, I would say the far and away most talented team in the history of the sport. They're going to be there. One way or another, you're going to need to be better than them. And yes, there are some quality teams in the Eastern Conference too, Boston, Toronto, possibly Philadelphia. But look, while you can't guarantee that the Rockets, if they make the finals, would beat one of those teams, I think you'll deal with that problem if and when it presents itself. For the Rockets, everything is about getting out of the Western Conference. Worry about everything else later. As far as the West, we've been over Golden State all summer long. Whenever the Rockets lose someone like Ariza or Bamute, or they add someone like James Ennis, Carmelo Anthony, or whoever it may be, we immediately analyze that, not just in terms of the Rockets themselves, but what it means in a hypothetical matchup with the Warriors. So for this show, I'm going to table that and focus more on the other teams, because while the Rockets really ran through the rest of the Western Conference a year ago, getting to that 65-17 record and then going 8-2 in the first two rounds of the playoffs, two gentlemen sweeps against the Timberwolves and the Jazz, it's far from a given that that happens again, because you could see, under certain scenarios, a radically different Western Conference. And before going into specific teams too much, I think it's important to start the discussion by looking at it through a more philosophical lens. And what I mean by that is, will the Western Conference in 2018-2019 look more like the West a year ago in terms of the huge break? Again, the closest team to the Rockets a year ago was 16 games back. That was Portland at seed 3, but then you go 3 through 9, Portland, Oklahoma City, Utah, New Orleans, San Antonio, Minnesota, Denver, who didn't even make the playoffs, all those, seven seeds separated by 3 games. Portland at the 3 seed had 49, Denver at the 9, missing the playoffs, had 46, and then you had another team in the West, the LA Clippers, that also had a winning record, 42-40, and oh, by the way, the 11 seed, that's the Lakers, who won 35 games and then added LeBron James. So the question is it going to be a West with a lot of parity, what we saw last year, or is it going to be more of a traditional West in that you have not necessarily a balanced gradient, but not as steep as this past year when it comes to the Rockets, the Warriors in those top two spots, and everyone else? As I see it, there are pros and cons to both scenarios. If you stick with the West the way it was last year, which is a bit of an outlier for perspective, just 1 year before that, the 2017 playoffs, the 3 seed, the Rockets, that year had 55 wins, and then you had two more teams in the 50s, that's the 4 and the 5 seeds with the LA Clippers and the Utah Jazz. The 3 seed Rockets had 55 wins, the 8 seed, the Trailblazers, had 41. That's a 14-game difference as opposed to a 2-game difference this past season, which was a bit of an outlier. So there are pros and cons to both if you're the Rockets. The pro, if you have a steep gradient like you did last year, is that barring some sort of catastrophic collapse or terrible injury, you're almost assured of getting to the Western Conference Finals. It assures you of getting that extra shot against Golden State, whether you have home court or not. They did have home court advantage last year. Of course, the Rockets are going to try for that again this year. We've heard from Daryl Morey that that's a priority. But essentially, if you have that much of a drop-off between the top two seeds and the rest of the West, nothing is guaranteed, but look, something would have to go catastrophically wrong for a team in the 40s to beat a team as good as the Rockets or the Warriors this past season. That's the upside to it. The downside to it is that no one is challenging the Warriors. We saw that in the first 2 rounds when the Warriors also had gentlemen sweeps against the Spurs and the Pelicans, the 6-seeded Pelicans, who just quite simply did not have nearly enough talent to compete with the Warriors in round 2. On the other hand, if one of these teams takes a big step forward, like a lot of us expected the Oklahoma City Thunder to do a year ago, maybe be a mid-50s team in the Western Conference, maybe that's the recipe to challenging Golden State, especially if they're the 2 seed in the second round, maybe if the stars align, beating them, but more likely at least tax them a little bit to where they don't just have, well, of course they're going to have the talent advantage, but on top of the talent advantage, they don't even really have to expend themselves very much in those first 2 rounds. So in short, it's how much do you want to gamble? If the West is more traditional, meaning you have some teams in that 3-4-5 range that separate themselves from the pack, you increase the variance. You potentially give Golden State more of a run in the first couple of rounds, especially the second round. But you could also give the Rockets more of a run by extension, depending on exactly how the seedings fall. Whereas if they stay the same, the Rockets are probably not going to be challenged the same way they weren't this past year in the first 2 rounds. But the Warriors aren't going to be either, so they're going to be coming into the Western Conference Finals, assuming health, relatively fresh. There are reasons to believe that either scenario could happen this coming season. For the remainder of the podcast, I'm going to operate under the assumption that this year is more of a traditional year. Because if it's not a traditional year and everybody stays in that pack, which could happen, let's be real, none of the teams in that mix got significantly worse, at least on paper, and the Lakers, who weren't even in that 3-10 mix, the teams with the winning records and the 40s win totals, the Lakers added LeBron James, probably the best player in the sport, at least when he's focused and dialed in like he is in the playoffs. So it might be like last year again, in which there's a lot of upper-class mediocrity and all these teams kind of cancel each other out. But if that's the case, we already saw what happened just this past season, and if you're the Rockets, all you have to do is take care of business on your end, and you should get your shot against the Warriors. That's almost boring, because we just saw it play out. Maybe it does again. For today's show, I'm going to take a little bit more of a different lens and look at it through the what if there is some separation, and look at where that could occur and what that means for the Rockets. So before I go too in-depth on which teams might make a step up I'm going to look at how teams could theoretically fall back down. By the way, one point I should have mentioned in the earlier segment, it's not just the teams in the top 10 and the LA Lakers. Even some of the teams at the very bottom could theoretically be better. The Mavs added DeAndre Jordan. Maybe Memphis gets better health and luck with their veterans, guys like Mike Conley and Marc Gasol. Even the Suns, bottom of the West, added Trevor Ariza, who, according to at least some national media, would have you believe is a significant difference maker. There's a case that maybe it's like last year, a lot of parity outside of the Rockets and the Warriors, and if that's the case, well, I think we have a good idea of what's going to happen, assuming health. However, for purposes of this segment, let's discuss how it wouldn't happen, where there's some separation. And the reason that I believe that could happen, not necessarily saying it will, but that it could, is because you have a lot of teams that while talent-wise are the same, or maybe even slightly better than a year ago, there are some off-the-court, under-the-radar bubbling situations that could kind of come to a head. And so even though the team might not necessarily seem that much worse on paper, it's not always about what the roster is. Sometimes it's about the chemistry. And to me, you look at a lot of these teams in the West last year, you had a lot of quality young teams that stepped forward. The Pelicans, the Timberwolves, even the Blazers. And you're not necessarily going to have the same benefits of youth, continuity, chemistry, now that expectations are raised, as you did when expectations were more muted, as they were for most of those teams entering this past season. I'll start with New Orleans. Look, they were a pretty good story, especially how they came together after the Boogie Cousins injury. First, they lost, well, Boogie Cousins, but they made the run largely without him. But beyond that, they lost Rajon Rondo. And if there's any sort of a slow start, every year that passes without the Pelicans breaking into that upper tier in the Western Conference gets you closer to Anthony Davis having a pathway to potentially get out, or at least start thinking about ways out, the way we saw maybe starting last season with Kawhi Leonard and the Spurs. Not saying it's to that extreme, because certainly there's not the off-court drama between Davis and the Pelicans franchise like there has been between Kawhi and the Spurs, but the point is, when you have these young stars, if they're not on a contender, the closer they get every year that passes, gets them closer to their next free agency, and without the team really taking a jump into that top tier, you get a little more rumblings, you get a little more uncertainty. You can make a similar argument for Portland. Look, 2 years ago, Portland was 41-41, and last year's roster wasn't that much different. They won 49 games, chemistry got going, especially in the second half of the year, with the point differential just plus 2.6, always kind of hinted that the 49-33, 16 games over, might be a bit exaggerated. Then in the playoffs, didn't even win a game, lost 4-0 to those New Orleans Pelicans. And this entire offseason, after not winning a game in the playoffs, we've seen all the bickering on Twitter, guys, not between each other, but of course, CJ McCollum and the rest of the league. There's a lot of angst, is the word that I would go with for the Portland Trailblazers. And because they have all those huge contracts, think back to what Jesus Rodriguez told us in a recent episode about the big Myers-Leonard deal kind of unraveling the first iteration of Carmelo Anthony to Houston last summer, which would have been a three-team deal, including the Portland Trailblazers. There's not a lot of avenues for which the Blazers can improve their roster. So who's to say, especially with the point differential lagging, that last year's team that was 16 games over is that much different than the group who was exactly at 500 2 years ago and an 8 seed? The line can be very thin, especially with a point differential that's that small. Oftentimes, it can be about chemistry. Well, now, after not even winning a single game in the playoffs, there are questions about that, and whereas last year was a feel-good story, the narrative was easy to build because there weren't that many expectations, well, now there are expectations, and if things go wrong, you could easily see it, not necessarily unraveling, but falling a little bit. And in a Western Conference, all it takes is one team to fall a little bit for another team to make a jump up from instead of being in the upper 40s, maybe being in the low to mid-50s in terms of their win total, and then potentially getting the benefits of confidence and everything else that comes with winning more games. I mean, a solid 3 or 4, as opposed to just the consistently in flux 3-9, really no one outside the Rockets and Warriors even clinching a playoff berth until the final week of the season. You could argue that the Spurs got better because Kawhi Leonard only played 9 games last year, and now you're replacing him, theoretically, with DeMar DeRozan, but they did lose Danny Green as part of the DeRozan-Kawhi trade. Green was a huge part of their defense, especially against the Rockets. We saw how he flustered James Harden at times. Also lost Tony Parker, and besides that, you have a Spurs team that just, it feels like they're playing out the string in terms of the Greg Popovich era. Aldridge, Ginobili, Gasol, Rudy Gay, you have so many aging players, wrong side of the aging curve, that are not going to get any better. They're well coached and disciplined enough to where they'll be pesky, but can that team realistically win 50 plus games and be in the mix as far as a 3-4 seed that can actually give the Rockets or Warriors a run in round two? I just don't see the talent. And if anything, the existing talent that was part of the group that kind of just mucked their way to a 47-35 record a year ago, that talent's getting worse. And then there's the Minnesota Timberwolves, which is the most interesting team to me of all. Because theoretically, they have the most upside. Because look, they won 47 games, and that was with Jimmy Butler missing almost 2 months with a torn meniscus. When Butler was healthy, and it was the first year that Butler was in Minnesota, they were consistently the 3 or 4 seed, and that was without the benefits of any continuity. They may continue, in theory, you could make an argument, to get even better. The flip side, we have heard all offseason about underlying issues chemistry-wise. We've seen Jimmy Butler's various Instagram likes about Jimmy Butler, Karl Anthony Towns not really being on the same page. The defensive issues haven't gone away. They don't take nearly as many threes as you would think is almost a prerequisite to win in the modern NBA. And above all else, the guy who makes that engine go, Jimmy Butler, can be a free agent next summer. He can leave them for zero compensation, which can make any downturn, even just a bad week, 3 or 4 losses in a row, that can make things really sticky if you have fingers pointing in the locker room. And then, of course, the entire organization has to wonder, can they make it work with Jimmy Butler, or do you, closer to the trade deadline, explore trades to potentially get something rather than nothing if he's going to leave as a free agent in the summer? Now, that's just a quick rundown through teams in the West that made the playoffs last year that I think could take a step back this year. Obviously, you could argue about teams that weren't in the playoffs, and you could argue about teams that were in the playoffs that I'm more optimistic on. More on them in a second when I look at kind of the upside scenarios, if there's more of a normal gradient in the Western Conference. But the point is, even though situations on paper may not seem that much worse, you may not look at Portland and say, wow, this roster is clearly worse than the group that went 49-33, or the Pelicans that went 48-34, or the Timberwolves 47-35. Sometimes, from 1 year to the next, chemistry changes, contract dynamics change, and you can go from being a fun young team that is overachieving expectations to one that all of a sudden is disappointing when they're even a little bit off the pace they set. Yet now that there's higher expectations and star players are a year closer to becoming free agents, even a slight decline all of a sudden can make the pieces, the culture, not fit as well from 1 year to the next. By the way, that's why it's so important in Houston that Chris Paul, James Harden, Clint Capella, the big three, all signed through at least the year 2022, because you're not going to have any of that off-court stuff becoming a real issue in Houston, in my opinion. It's going to be just about the basketball because you have that security. It's not that way for most of the NBA, and if you want to see some teams taking a step back, then to me, those are kind of the situations where it starts. And by extension, if some teams take a step back, then that leaves some more wins that are there for the taking that other teams can grab to then get, instead of being in the upper 40s, as most were in the Western Conference last year, to somehow being in the low to mid 50s. Now, I spent the last segment talking about teams that I could see taking a step back if we're in this scenario where there's some more separation in the Western Conference and maybe a team or two emerges that could give the Rockets or Warriors, maybe not beating them in a series, but at least a run, at least challenge them in a way that the Timberwolves and the Jazz and the Spurs and the Pelicans did not with the Rockets and Warriors this past year. I talked about the teams that could take a step back. To me, the teams that could take a step forward, if there are more wins for the taking, would be the Lakers, the Jazz, and the Thunder. And I'll go from, I would say, least to most likely. The least likely, in my opinion, is the Lakers. Of course, they'll take a step up. I do expect them to make the playoffs, even though, of course, you can laugh at JaVale McGee, Lance Stephenson, Rajon Rondo, who am I forgetting, Michael Beasley, and that awkward cast that they put together around LeBron. But look, they're the Lakers, and when LeBron is focused, he's as good as it gets. Not just now, but in the history of the game. That said, we have been through 2 consecutive seasons in the Eastern Conference where the Cavaliers, for their talent, have wildly underachieved, even relative to their postseason performance. Look, say what you will about the Cavs this past postseason, I never really bought in, but they swept a very good Toronto team. I know Toronto was dealing with its own issues, especially with the Lowry-DeRozan pairing, but what the Cavaliers did in the playoffs and then winning a Game 7 at Boston, that was legitimately impressive, even within the context of the Eastern Conference. And that was not reflective of their regular season performance. And the biggest difference is that LeBron James, basically the same age as Carmelo Anthony, 33, 15 years in the NBA, it's not really realistic to ask him to give every single thing he has in the regular season. LeBron turns 34 before the end of the year. It's year 16 for him in the NBA. Look, one of the reasons a lot of his stans don't like it, but that Harden won MVP, and deservedly so, over LeBron, James Harden, for all the flack he gets, was a better defensive player in the regular season than LeBron James. And it's not because James Harden is a more talented defensive player than LeBron. No, LeBron can turn it up based on physical gifts and other characteristics that can get him to a level that James Harden, at least defensively, just can't get to. That's reality. But over the regular season, there's plenty of data showing that Harden was the better defensive player. And it's a reflection of the fact that LeBron, given his mileage, is not really capable of doing that without breaking down for 82 games. And the longer he goes into his career, I think that trend is only going to continue. That said, this year might be a slight exception to that, because I think LeBron going to a new city, a new team, the lights of Staples Center for the first time, my guess is you see a more rejuvenated LeBron in the regular season than in the past. On the flip side, does he have as much left in the tank for the playoffs? We'll have to wait and see. My guess is that, at least to some degree, you have a more motivated LeBron James over 82 games, especially in the regular season, than in years past. And so that makes the Lakers a candidate to get towards that top tier of the Western Conference, especially if maybe towards the trade deadline, another situation, maybe Kawhi in Toronto starts to unravel, and then the Lakers are potentially a destination because, well, the player could threaten to sign there in the summer anyway if he's not traded there, the same way Carmelo was traded to the Knicks back in the 2011 season before he could have signed there that summer. So the Lakers, between their young prospects and potentially having max cap room next summer, there are avenues that they can improve during the season. And I do think LeBron will have a little more in the tank this coming year than he did his last year in Cleveland when everybody thought that he was on the way out. I think that contributed to some of the malaise that LeBron and the Cavs found in the regular season. But I don't think it's all of it. I think it's part of it, but a lot of it, too, is just the fact that, look, LeBron has a ton of mileage, and over the regular season, I don't know that you can count on him to maximize his team's every win the same way you can with James Harden in Houston. So while there's a scenario you could see the Lakers taking a jump up, I think it's somewhat mitigated by just normal NBA aging curve. And so while I could see them having an optimistic season, I don't really see them as the biggest threat. The team that a lot of people will see as the biggest threat, if there's going to be a jump forward, would be the Utah Jazz, and I understand why. Second half of the season, this played like a 55 to 60 win juggernaut. They flat out crushed teams, including the Warriors, who I believe they beat by 20 plus points three different times. Now, I know the Warriors are a different team in the playoffs than the regular season, but that's quite an accomplishment in its own right. And the case is pretty logical. Look, the Jazz bring back almost the same supporting cast. They should get Ricky Rubio healthy again. And beyond bringing back the supporting cast, the fact that Quinn Snyder is, if not the best coach, I'd say definitely top three in the NBA from a tactical standpoint, he is insanely good. Oh, and the Jazz did everything last year with Donovan Mitchell as a rookie. He is only going to continue to get better, or at least that's the way it looks on paper. So it's no surprise to me that everyone seems bullish on the Jazz, and we've even seen some reports suggesting that, oh, maybe the Jazz outplay the Rockets, which I think is silly, and get into the top two, but at least that's out there, according to some of the national media. However, as with any trend, it can be overdone. And I do think we need to pump the brakes a little bit on Utah. Not a lot. There'll still be a playoff team. My bet is that they do cross the 50-win plateau. I don't really see them getting to 55-plus because I think some of the factors that worked for them a year ago may work against them this coming year. For starters, Donovan Mitchell, look, drafted 13th overall. No one thought he would be that good. No one thought the Jazz would be that good. And because their style, defensive-oriented, the slow pace is so distinctive, especially amongst playoff teams in the Western Conference, I think there was a lot of catching teams by surprise. And with Snyder being so good of a tactician, I think that teams that weren't necessarily prepared for the Jazz, it was made even worse because Snyder adjusts quicker than most other coaches do. They're not going to really have that benefit this year. And I think it was especially pronounced because the Jazz started last season slow and then really picked up the second half of the year. The Jazz are now going from the hunter to the hunted. They are one of the big boys going into the season. And while Donovan Mitchell could get better, actually one of the reasons I'm really bullish on him long term is that one of his weaknesses was actually his jump shot. And on paper, that's one of the easier things to improve. The things that he is so good at in terms of the way he sees the floor, his footwork, are the things that are so hard to coach. But there is such a thing as a sophomore slump. There's adjusting to the adjustments. And it's not like the Jazz are an overwhelmingly talented team. Now, defensively, they are. But offensively, look, you really only have one consistent creator in Donovan Mitchell. And this is a guy who, going into last year, had no track record. This isn't me talking down on the Jazz because I don't believe in them. I think they're certainly going to be a playoff team. I would bet that they win around 50 games. And they won't be fun for anyone to play in the playoffs. That said, I would tap the brakes just a little bit because I do think you're going to see teams prepare for them and treat them a little bit differently this coming season than they did this past year. I think the sophomore slump factor with a young player like Donovan Mitchell, there can be some reality even for someone as good as Donovan. And while Quinn Snyder and that excellent coaching staff can certainly adjust back to whatever the changes are in terms of how teams play the Jazz this coming season, it might take a little bit of time. So while I think they'll be a very good team, I would tap the brakes on them getting to the 55-plus range, which I've seen a lot of projections, at least nationally, doing these past few weeks. And certainly they're a fun team. They've got a lot of colorful personalities. It's a small market. Everyone wants them to do well. I don't think they'll wildly underachieve. I just don't quite buy into them to the extent that a lot nationally seem to be doing. The one team I haven't mentioned yet, I save them for last because they are the team that kind of scares me the most. Not saying that they should beat the Rockets, but at least under the perfect storm could be a threat, and also to the Warriors, and that's the Oklahoma City Thunder. And no, it's not because Carmelo Anthony left. That would be the lazy take. I just think as much fun as we had, and by we, I mean Rockets fans and really the entire NBA Twitter community, at Oklahoma City's relative underachieving a year ago, as I said with Utah, any trend, you can overdo it. And to me, I think there's a little too much in terms of assuming that the Russell Westbrook model can't work. Now, maybe it can't win a title, but I think it can be a little better than the team in the upper 40s, which is where some seem to have them pegged as the upper range of their mobility. First off, we did see last year, especially early in the season, that they were able not just to beat, but in many cases destroy some of the upper echelon teams like the Warriors, the Raptors. They did have a win on Christmas against the Rockets, although the Rockets did not have CP3 in that game. But when I think back to last year's Thunder, I go back to late January when they did seem to be putting it together before the Andre Robertson injury, which took a huge toll out of their defense. Remember, before then, they were inconsistent, but they had beaten the top teams, as we said, started to put together in January when they really, really looked strong. And then the defense never really found itself after that Robertson injury, and then especially without Robertson, the Jazz, and their pace, their defensive oriented game was just a nightmare for the Thunder, especially with Paul George struggling to get going in the playoffs. Hashtag playoff P. That said, it was year one for the Russell Westbrook-Paul George partnership. They are going to get better. They retained most of the supporting cast. They got deeper, adding Nerlens Noel, another defensive guy, to play behind Steven Adams up front. They get Robertson back. They should be a much better defensive team. And the entire vibe around Oklahoma City, it just reminds me a little bit of the way the Rockets were counted out entering the second year of James Harden and Dwight Howard, which is what it is, the second year for Russell Westbrook and Paul George. And what I mean by that, the first year of the Rockets in the Dwight Howard era, now they were better than this past year's Thunder. The Rockets did win 54 games that regular season. The Thunder just won 48 this past year, although it was an even tougher Western Conference. But we know how things ended in the playoffs. The Rockets lost in six games to the Blazers, a team that they had home court advantage against. Everyone made fun of the Rockets the whole offseason. Everybody threw shade at James Harden and Dwight Howard because that's what they like to do. And the Rockets instead used all that doubt as fuel and came back a much more cohesive focus group. Now, they did lose Chandler Parsons, bring in a defensive upgrade in Trevor Ariza that offseason. But guess what? The Thunder are going to be bringing back Andre Robertson, who represents a defensive upgrade for them, especially compared to what we saw down the stretch of the season. I'm not saying I expect the Thunder to be a contender, but I could see them, of the teams in that really 3 through 11 range, they, to me, have the most upward mobility because we did see the upside last year in terms of how dominant they appeared at times against upper echelon opponents. There was just a lot of inconsistency, a lot of just weird little things that, when you factor in year two of the Russell Westbrook-Paul George partnership, better chemistry, a little bit better health, and maybe a chip on their shoulder, I could see them becoming a little more dangerous. I don't see them being as good as the Rockets or the Warriors by any means, but to me, if a team gets to that number three spot, and by the way, some of you might be wondering, well, if a team gets to 53 or 55 wins and some of these teams that are in the mid-40s fall back to being like 500, how much better are they really, or is it just that they're taking wins from these other teams that are taking step backs? Maybe to a small degree, but I think also if you get a team that's consistently at number three, wins, say, 55 games, it just builds more confidence as opposed to some of the issues that happened last year, some of these teams, especially, let's go with the Thunder, quite frankly, I think it took a toll on their mental health, the fact that they, up until the last week of the year, did not even clinch a playoff spot. So I think part of it, if you're consistently stable and seen as a top three, top four team in the West, then that can build chemistry in and of itself because you're more confident on a day-to-day basis as opposed to every time you lose a game or two, all of a sudden, here comes the media, here come the doubts again, and then the whole thing is kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy at that point. So in closing, it depends on what you want. If you want it to be like last year, then the path is pretty simple for the Rockets to get to the Western Conference Finals. The downside is that, well, you're not really challenging the Warriors either, and so you're going to be going up in a seven-game series, and it's probably the most talented team ever, and hopefully, the Rockets will have home court advantage again. We'll have to wait and see if they can capture the chemistry they had this past year. The other scenario, if some teams emerge in the Western Conference, well, if you're the Rockets, maybe it gives the Warriors a bigger run, and that could be useful, even if they don't beat the Warriors, at least take them to six, seven games. You can tax them a little bit more than the Spurs and Pelicans did this past year. But guess what? It can also threaten you. And the Thunder in particular worry me a little bit for the Rockets standpoint, because if there's one question I have with the Rockets entering the season, especially if you're losing Trevor Ariza, it's not really guarding the Kevin Durant types. It's stopping dribble penetration. We saw that a lot against the Timberwolves in Utah in the first two rounds of the playoffs. Daryl Morey cited it in the draft recap press conference when they drafted DeAnthony Melton. Maybe he comes on soon. Maybe Michael Carter Williams, they can tap into his potential in a way that other teams have not with his length defensively. But when the Rockets knocked out the Thunder, led by Russell Westbrook in his quote-unquote MVP season, I'm doing air quotes as I say that, the Rockets had so many different types of defenders, not just Trevor Ariza. They had Patrick Beverley, who was a bulldog they could throw at Russell Westbrook. Well, now there's no Beverley. There's also no Ariza. Chris Paul, even though he's a good team defender, not really good one-on-one, does not move anywhere near as well as he used to side to side. At his age, it's not going to get much better. Same can be said for James Harden and Eric Gordon. They are what they are, the Rockets. They did bring in James Ennis. Maybe he takes a step up, but at the end of the day, he's just one guy. You've lost both Ariza and Beverley the last two offseason, so I think the Rockets realize they need a new influx of youth and energy on the perimeter. Hopefully one of, or maybe both, of guys like DeAnthony Melton, Michael Carter-Williams can develop into that. Maybe they trade for another guy with a Ryan Anderson move at some point or acquire another in the buyout market. But right now, that need to stop dribble penetration, it was there in the first two rounds of the playoffs, we saw it. The Warriors don't necessarily attack the same way, so it wasn't really a big deal in terms of Houston Golden State. But it's an area that teams could exploit, and so to me, that's the one risk if you have a team like the Thunder take a step forward, is that depending on the draw of the Western Conference, theoretically they could be on the Warriors' side of the bracket, but they could also be on yours. So again, there's advantages to both sides of the equation there. Or both sides of the hypothetical debate, I should say. With that, I'll wrap up today's show, and really, we'll probably do it for this week of Locked On Rockets. I'm working on some interviews to get a little bit more mellow talk and also break down the entire offseason, but with tomorrow being Friday, not sure they'll pan out for this week. We may be pushing those to next week. So if we do have an episode tomorrow, treat that as a bonus. For now, though, I'm anticipating this being it for a few days. As always, thanks to you all for tuning in. If you want more content in the interim, best place to get it is on Twitter. I'm on there at Ben Dubose. Show is on there at Locked On Rockets. Also, email address, lockedonrockets@gmail.com. Facebook at facebook.com/lockedonrockets. Website at lockedonrockets.com. Always, you can access our content, ask me questions about the team, advertising inquiries, anything we can do to make this a better podcast for you, the diehard Rockets fan, please don't hesitate to let me know. Also, subscribe to us if you haven't already, please. That's how you get breaking news. You get alerts when there are new episodes out, so you don't have to wait for me to post it on Twitter or check the websites. You'll get it automatically emailed to you. And if you'd also be kind enough to leave a 5-star review, that's how we can look attractive to potential clients and make the advertising and business model work here at Locked On Rockets as the most regular podcast covering Houston Rockets basketball. Also, if you have not checked out our sister podcast, Locked On Texans Across Town, please do. The Texans have their second preseason game home against the San Francisco 49ers this Saturday night. And my friends Robert Lind and Brian Patterson, they will have you covered in terms of a preview. And I'm sure they will have a recap on Sunday after that game ends late Saturday night. So with that, we can put a bow on today's episode. As always, thanks for listening. And please check back as soon as you can for more content right here at Locked On Rockets, your home for podcast analysis of Houston Rockets basketball.